You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
We welcome you back. Second half of the program is live and underway. The 4th of July weekend pretty much has arrived. We'll talk to the host of College Game Day here in a couple of minutes. Will there be a College Game Day this year? Reese Davis joining us in a few minutes. And let's get back to the calls at 855-242-7285. And Augie is in New Orleans.
Hey, happy 4th of July, Paul. We can celebrate,
thank you, Augie.
Right? We can still celebrate the 4th of July, right?
I don't know. We should have run that by Jeff from Columbus.
Boy, Paul, how do you handle it when he calls? Because it was hurting my ears just on the phone. With those earbuds, how do you deal with that?
Yeah, I usually find something else to do for a couple of minutes.
Okay. I'm not watching on TV today, but I do see sometimes you zone out when Jeff calls. So I think it's a challenge having to deal with it. But hey, so I haven't been watching a show, but I'm sure you probably touched on Boise State dropping baseball, right?
I did see that, but we haven't talked about it.
Well, so Boise State dropping baseball is like LSU dropping ice hockey. Does it really matter? I mean, come on.
It's not going to really ever affect my life.
I don't know much about Mountain West baseball. I know we did play Hawaii a couple of years back, but other than that, I don't know if that's a big sport. But one of the things that – has anybody ever brought up the fact that to date, the football season has been disrupted. No spring practice, workouts have been messed up. Has anybody touched on the fact that we're now possibly looking at a safety issue? Meaning guys who are going to go out there and slam into each other are probably not in the kind of condition they should be in or have been in the past because of the, you know, cramp this whole thing has put on just training and development.
Yeah, I mean, and we're getting close. July 13th is really the start of what you would call fall camp. 3 weeks in shorts and then in pads, but I mean that's the real deal, and you have to wonder what are they going to do because it's, you know, we're getting to the serious point of practice now. I mean, it's no longer just quote unquote volunteer workouts.
But do you not think that we're already past that point and overturn in a sense? Do you think we're going to see more injuries because there's not a whole lot of time between now and the start of the season, whereas if these guys weren't on their own, and you know how it is, these are kids, do you think they were on their own doing what they should have been doing as opposed to actually being in a workout facility?
No, there's no way. Now, you know, some could. I mean, I've heard stories of, you know, more affluent parents finding a way into a private gym or someone who has a gym in their home or a high school gym. But I would say the majority did not work out than the rest of us.
Exactly. Do you think there's going to be a spike? And this would be very interesting as the season progresses. If there is a spike in more injuries on the field, would you say that that's a direct correlation to this whole COVID situation?
I mean, it's hard to say now, but I mean, I'm not even optimistic enough to get to that point. I think there's so much negativity out there right now that we may be having a moot conversation here.
Well, I think, Paul, when you talk to Reese, the bottom line, and we said this all along, money talks, and you know what walks. And I think that the NCAA and the schools are going to do everything in their power, regardless of what it costs to the players to have a season. I mean, honestly, I think they need to just pull the plug. I hate that, but
let me ask you this, though. I certainly understand where you're coming from, and you're not alone, but I also wonder, though, I mean, I think it's too early to make that call, but I do think we could be coming down to a point where, I mean, the one thing that is happening is that the positivity train has ended.
But the positivity train is sort of like watching a battle. Oh, we took that hill, but we lost this one. Every day it's an ebb and flow. And there was a point when it wasn't that long ago. You were very high. You were peppy.
No,
you were
I would say I think it was the Friday before Memorial Day. I'm almost positive it was. We had Commissioner Sankey on. I mean, everybody was just going. I mean, it was like a celebration, Augie, in many ways, because it seemed like everything was going the right way. Hey, by the way, there is some news. Let me report this before we get to our next guest. Stuart Mandel will join us in a couple of minutes, but the commissioner of the next hour, I should say, and he lives on the West Coast, but the commissioner of the Pac-12, Larry Scott, and we've talked to Larry a couple of times here during this, gave an interview to John Wilner, who's out in San Jose. And his comments need to be, this is maybe the most sobering I've heard from anyone yet. He said this: I still want to be cautiously optimistic, but if there's no change in society's response and behavior, which results in a quick flattening of the curve and a decrease in the spread of the virus, that would lead to a much more pessimistic view about our campuses being able to open and our ability to play college sports. Now, our college administrators now looking for a way out, saying, hey, listen, we did our part. We did everything we could. But, you know, these idiots on the at Alabama and Texas and Arizona and everywhere else who didn't listen to the health guidelines have now made it untenable. I mean, I'm just wondering. That's an interesting quote there. And you heard the same thing from the governor of South Carolina yesterday. We can't have football unless. What took everyone so long? Let's get back to the calls. And Elliot is in Mississippi. Hello, Elliot.
Hello, how you doing, Paul? First time caller. Really enjoy the show.
Thank you very much.
Wanted to follow up on a couple of previous calls. The first point, the idea of this being, I guess, trying to have it both ways from the player's perspective. I really don't see that comment because, as you just said, if it were not for the money involved in this equation, we wouldn't even be having this conversation about football. It runs counter to everything that we're talking about when we're shutting down businesses because they're non-essential. We really have to look at sports as a non-essential activity. And the only reason we're having a discussion about this being something that has to move forward is a dependence on the money associated with college football.
You're right. You're 100% correct. And it's not essential. You can never say it is, but it's important. And by the way, we're sitting here at the beginning of July, a date that if you had told me 6 weeks ago, I would have told you we would know the answer by July 1st. We don't know the answer, but the trend lines are turning negative. That's for sure.
I mean, but I guess considering that and where we're going, how do we entertain the idea of having football games? And even if we have stands that are at 25% capacity, you know, you're still talking about 25,000 people at Ohio State or 20,000 people.
Elliot, even before that, I mean, you have governors of every state in the country now saying, you know, you better wear a mask, do this, do that. And we're sitting here arguing whether we should have put 100 college football players in a locker room and march them on a field with pads, knocking each other's head off. Mm-hmm. I mean, on one level, it does not make a lot of sense, does it?
It does not. It does not. But, you know, of course, with the way things are in the country, because of the politics behind to wear a mask or not wear a mask, I think that has helped us get to this position. You know, we haven't been able to approach the problem as one united country. You know, I don't. It's shameful that we've let politics divide us on something as important as a pandemic going on around the world.
I totally agree. Hey, listen, thank you for the call. Really appreciate it. You have a great holiday. We are up against a break. Reese Davis, the host of College Game Day, will join us next.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
And we welcome you back. We'll continue with more of your phone calls at 855-242-7285. Stuart Mandel will join us a little bit later on. Let's check out Greg now. Hey, Greg.
Hello, Mr. Feinbaum. How are you today, sir?
I am well. Thank you for calling.
I'm a first-time caller, long-time listener. And it's an honor just to talk to you, Mr. Feinbaum.
Well, thank you very much. That's awfully kind of you.
I guess I'm piggybacking that other guy kind of stole my thunder. You know what football means in the state of Alabama better than anybody. God knows I love Alabama football. But Mr. Feinbaum, I don't see no way we're going to be able to play football. I just don't think it's possible. And I don't think the NBA,
yeah,
I don't think anything's going to get up and running.
It's certainly
going to
be difficult.
And I hate to be a Debbie Downer, you know, but I mean, it's just, I listen every day and everybody's got all of these questions, yet there's no answers. Because we don't, you know, there's never been anything like this.
Yeah, I mean, let me defend the people involved. First of all, that's their job, is to come up with contingency plans to work. I think we're getting close to the point where what I want to hear, and I think we're finally hearing it, I just want to hear realistic evaluations of where we are. I don't think we've heard much of that in the past 3 months. I think we've heard a lot of smoke and mirrors. But hey, thank you very much for the call. It means a lot that you would call and say that. We have somebody here now who is as plugged in as anyone in the country to where college football is, and ultimately where people hope it may be going. Reese Davis, the host of College Game Day, certainly is joining us. Reese, first of all, great to have you back. I hope all is well.
Yeah, everything's great, Paul. It's always good to be with you.
Well, thank you. I saw you the other day speaking about college football and all the difficulty of where it is and what it has to do. We'd like to lean on you a little bit because you talk to so many people, and opinions right now are not overly important, but you know, information and direction is. And in terms of the people with whom you speak, where do you think we are, and what's the roadmap to Labor Day weekend?
Over the last week, Paul, the people with whom I've spoken to have had varying degrees of optimism. But the phrase that has stuck with me is that one influential person referred to it as bruised optimism, meaning that the rising number of cases in different places over across the country have really changed the way a lot of the power brokers thought maybe, you know, 2-3 4 weeks ago, so where they thought that they had plans in place. And I think I heard you say that like the SEC had 15, 20 contingency plans and so forth. Where I land on it, Paul, is this. And again, it's just an opinion. I still am optimistic that we will be able to play. I do not think that there will be crowds. I don't know what that means, if that means 10%, 20% or whatever, but there's not going to be a full house anyplace if they are able to play. But most of it depends on what do these latest positive cases of the novel coronavirus mean. You know, do we have a spike in death rate? Do we have a spike in serious illness? And the one thing that I hope and pray doesn't happen, and thankfully has not happened up to this point that I'm aware of, is someone, one of the athletes, getting really ill, and hopefully, you know, not anyone will lose a life. But if something like that happened, obviously that changes the dynamic in a millisecond. But overall, I'm still optimistic they will play. But, you know, everything, as you've pointed out many times, everything changes on a near daily basis, it seems like.
Yeah, and Reese, I think, and what's happening nationally, I mean, while it's not new, the spiking is fairly recent, and the one good news is that the deaths have not followed, but there's no guarantee that's not going to be able, that's going to be able to hold up. So I wonder, do you think the people, and we're not talking about thousands of people here. I mean, there are a handful of people that are pretty much sitting at this table. Do you think they're watching the same thing we are to get guidance, or do you think they feel committed to get this thing going?
That's a great question. I think it's a mixture of both, because the other thing is, and you don't want to be callous with something this serious and with the destruction that this thing has unleashed on the country. But, you know, you don't want to be callous about it. But I do think that they are looking at it from a business standpoint. I think the players have found out that they have some juice in this, too. And they've, took real notice of what the UCLA players asked for a couple weeks ago in terms of independent party oversight. And everybody has to acknowledge the fact that these players, while the schools have told them if they're not comfortable, you know, there's an inordinate amount of peer pressure on them to play for sure. But if they're comfortable that, you know, nobody's going to take their scholarship, and a number of schools have said that, but there's a lot of peer pressure to play. And to be honest, most of these guys want to play. The overwhelming majority want to, get in and have normal lives. But so I think that the people sitting at the table that you reference are going to have to be very prudent. They have to look at it from their business standpoint, but they cannot be so caught up in that they take unnecessary risk. And defining what a reasonable risk is probably the hardest question to answer of all out of this, because, you know, nothing when you have a virus like this, or really anything in life, comes without any risk. And we have no guarantee that we will ever be fully without risk relative to the virus. But, you know, you can't take, especially with unpaid players, it's not wise or the right thing to do, or the morally right thing to do, to take unreasonable risk. So that's the hardest question. And I'm not sure that you'll ever have enough data, because one, falling seriously ill, or heaven forbid, dying, is one too many. We just, you know, you don't want that. And that's it's a very difficult question. But to answer your question more succinctly, which is impossible at this point, I guess, I do think that I don't think the people sitting at the table are amoral to the point where they're like, we've got to play this because we have to balance the budget. Certainly they want to do that. They want to be able to remain fiscally viable and all of those things. But I don't think that the people making this decision will solely make it because of that without any regard to the well-being of the players.
Reese Davis with us. And Reese, not only do we all love college football, but it's the experience of Saturday morning, and you host the most watched pregame show in college football history, and I know that the next question may not have a good answer, because it may be impossible to answer, but I'm sure you've thought about it a few times. Assuming we do have college football, what happens with College game day.
If we have college football, we will have college game day. What that looks like, we are planning sort of like the conferences in college football are doing. We're looking at every contingency, all the way from, you know, socially distanced locales on campuses to, you know, there's been talk, do we do it inside empty stadiums? Do, you know, are there other ways to take it on the road? Do we do it in the studio? And we're planning for all of those so that we can deliver the show and maintain the standard of the show. But we're, you know, we're not totally waiting to see. We've had, you know, numerous meetings and calls and so forth, virtual meetings, obviously, about, you know, what the different shows would look like. So the short answer is we don't know, but we're planning for all of those things, and we will have a show. It, you know, I, much like I don't anticipate crowds, I don't expect game day this season to have shoulder to shoulder people standing right behind the stage. It would be wonderful if that's able to be done safely, but you know, that appears to be a long shot at this point. But we, you know, we will have a show some way, and whatever that means, there are a lot of different possibilities for that.
You also host basketball, the college, the basketball version of game day, and I bring this up because, you know, some are pushing more in the media than in college athletics for a spring season. We may see it in the Ivy League. What have you heard on that? Because you would be very busy on Saturday if we have basketball and football.
I don't know. That we haven't gotten to in terms of what it would mean for the basketball show or even the sport. Here's my position on the spring season, Paul. There's no guarantee that the risk will be any less in the spring than it is in the fall. If someone could come out and say, you know, tomorrow morning, look, we have the vaccine ready. It's going to be ready on December 26th. And if we've got enough dosage for everybody, and by spring, everybody's going to be in the clear. Okay, then that makes sense. But, you know, just kicking the can down the road, you know, I don't know. Now, if it's too risky and you want to kick the can down the road and say that's the only way to even potentially have any type of season, then okay. But, you know, this idea that, yeah, if we just push it back to spring, everything will be fine, I'm not sure that we know that for certain yet.
A lot of tough decisions out there, and they're coming down the track. Reese, I know that nobody has any quick answers, but we really appreciate you sharing your insight, especially the people with whom you visit with constantly. Have a great 4th, and all the best. Thanks so much for coming on.
You bet, Paul. Anytime. Thank you.
Reese Davis, the host of College Game Day, giving us his view of where we are. Stuart Mandel, a little bit later, the editor of The Athletic. And we're back after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
We welcome you back. Great to have all of you with us. And the really interesting comments from Reese. Still some optimism, but... I think what everyone is saying now is accurate. It's no longer really deciding how to do it. It's really the story on the front page of the newscast that may be determining everything else, and that's the spikes going on around the country, and they are pretty bad. You don't need me to tell you what's going on. You just have to look up. I thought he had something interesting too about game day, about trying to do social distancing. That is maybe the most anti-social distancing show in America. That could be a real challenge. Anyway, 855-242-7285. Love to hear from you. We'll be talking to you for the next hour and a half as we continue. Anthony is up next. Hey, Anthony, great to have you on.
Hey, Paul, how are you today?
I am well, thank you.
Good, good. Yeah, I keep hearing, I listen to your show every day. I'm here in Hoover, Alabama. And, I follow the cases every day. And, I get on the Worldometer every day, but also get on the Alabama Public Health Corona site.
Right.
Every day that site updates the number of cases tested or the number of tests provided. Over the last 2 weeks, there's been over 100,000 tests. So, compared to probably the first 2 months in the state of Alabama, there was about 100,000. So, to me, I get a feeling that around 7 to 10%, maybe 11% of the population has the virus. But the more you test, obviously, the more results you're going to get.
Right.
So, to me, we're being overreactive to the number of cases.
Now, what you say is correct. I'm wondering though, you can choose your favorite epidemiologist like you can your favorite politician or talk show host.
Yeah.
I mean, some are saying, regardless of that, they think that the number of people carrying it are vastly underreported. But I mean, I don't know how they know that, but I continually hear them say that though.
Underreported.
I think Fauci said the other day he thinks there could be 10 times the amount of people that have it than they have tested positive.
Well, I don't know, but I've been following, for the last few months. I like statistics to a point, but
sure.
It seems like it's in direct correlation with the number of tests as the number of positive results we're getting.
Yeah, tell me if you watch this closely. I mean, to me, the things that are most important, obviously the deaths are pretty significant. Those have gone down dramatically. But beyond that, I think it would be the overload of the hospital system, and as long as hospital beds are available for patients, and the ICU.
Yeah.
Other than that, I think you're right.
Well, and I follow that a little bit as well. I was at UAB Hospital the other day, and I think they reported that they had their highest number of cases, at UAB. And I think it was up to 74, but that's not much higher than what it's ever been. Montgomery, I've noticed an up spike in Montgomery. Tuscaloosa, not really so much as far as statistics wise.
Well, in a state like Alabama, though, it's not going to take much to change that. I mean, I think I just read something where the numbers are expanding, but again, compared to what? So I mean you're right. I mean you're I'm not a statistical genius.
I'm just following it.
Yeah, no, I mean it's the most interesting thing to follow right now. I would agree.
Yeah, but I just noticed that they rarely ever mentioned the fact that the tests are quadrupling. Not in the media.
I've heard the president mention it.
Well, I don't know about that. I don't follow politics too closely.
Well, hey, I appreciate your call. I mean, it's interesting stuff. Stay in touch with us, okay?
Okay, thanks, Paul.
Let's continue with more calls. And Larry is up next. Hey, Larry.
Yeah, how you doing? This is my second time calling in 2 weeks. And just on that last caller, if you go to the Johns Hopkins coronavirus website, it has cases in the world, U.S., all the countries, every city, every state. It has deaths by day, deaths in total. It has people who have recovered, and it has the number of tests. So it's all on there. And like you said, we're getting 50, 60,000, you know, more cases a day. My son had it. He's in his 20s, never got tested. But the death rate, while every death is bad, it's like between 500 and 1,000, and that's never gotten higher from the beginning of this. So that's a good thing. And most states have enough hospital beds. Okay, second thing is a commercial I heard on the break. Must have been for the Southwest Conference, because Paul didn't say I'm in Arkansas, because it said Arkansas can't be stopped in the SEC. So that was clearly an old commercial joke. The third thing is that I taught at Jim Valvano's basketball camp. I played college basketball. And what he said, we ought to all heed. We don't do this enough. And that was another commercial that was on, where he says every day you should think, you should laugh, and you should cry, and bring yourself to emotion. Last thing was, if this was an NBA player, an NFL player, major league, or even hockey male, it would be all over the news today. The biggest thing, one of the most heartfelt things, movie in the making that I have ever seen, is Maya Moore taking 2 years off from the WNBA to get this innocent guy out of jail after 22 years. That's why I called in.
Yeah, I saw her on television. You're right. That's a phenomenal story. And talk about sacrifice. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Yep. Okay, that's it. Keep it up, Paul.
Hey, thank you. Last thing is,
even if someone goes on and on and on, you're really patient. You know, Stephen A. would cut the guy off halfway through, and you let him keep going.
Stephen A. is one of my close friends, but Stephen A. would rather hear his voice than your voice. I'm really the opposite.
Oh, yeah. But I can't complain too much, because I'm from Pittsburgh, and he's a diehard Steeler fan.
Yeah, he's great. No, thank you for the call. Hey, and by the way, we, you know, I mean, that's what we do here. This is a talk show. It's not, I see the name on it enough times to realize whose name is on it, but that doesn't mean anything. My philosophy has always been the same, and it will always be. Anyway, we're sitting here knocking on the door of the holiday. We still have an hour and 15 minutes to go. And if you want to get in, we've actually, doesn't happen often, we've opened a few lines here, so it shouldn't be a long wait. 855-242-7285. That's 855-242-7285. Stuart Mandel in the final hour. We certainly want to talk to him about USC announcing today that they will not have students on campus. I think we'll see more of that. The Pac-12 commissioner, Larry Scott, casting perhaps the most negative view of the college football season from any of the Power Five commissioners. That story is out. We'll talk to Stewart about that. Jimbo Fisher slammed today by the NCAA. He received a 6-month show cause of aggressive recruiting tactics. We will get to your phone calls when we come back.
You are listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
We welcome you back. Great to have everyone here on a Thursday afternoon. Feels like a holiday weekend has arrived, because it has. Let's continue. Keith is up next in Birmingham. Hello, Keith.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking the call.
Thank you.
So I've listened to you for decades, and even though you're a wonderful pot stirrer, you go about it in an even-handed way. I was wondering what you think, how you feel your responsibilities as a journalist are today. So your show is based on calls. People will call up and give their dissertation on what they believe the Civil War was about, you know, their beliefs on masks, et cetera, et cetera. When we're in basically a global health crisis, is there a point where you cut some people off? Is there a point where it's your duty to make sure that accurate information is going out, even from callers? Or is that just a really gray area that's hard to deal with?
I don't think it is. And I've tried to do it without being political. And early on, I remember I had a couple of conversations with people who just started throwing up this, you know, the typical, this is nothing more than, it's not important. And I pushed them pretty hard because I really didn't want to hear that because I was really traumatized by what I was seeing, especially early on. So I decided to do it, but not to overdo it. I've said this, and sometimes I wonder when I say it. When I say I've tried to keep politics out of the program, what I mean by that is I don't come in here with a political ideology. But we're, you know, when we talk about a disease like this, I don't see politics. I know other people do, and it's become politicalization of it, or the politicization of it is really, you know, could help define the presidential election. But that's not my responsibility. But when it comes to common sense, I do think I have a responsibility, and I've tried to gently push that on the program.
I've noticed it, and I appreciate it. You know, I feel like you have an enormous reach and influence, and just wanted to see what you had to say questioned about it, because I have noticed
that.
I'm
glad you asked me, Keith. I was on one of the morning shows with Mike Greenberg, in fact, about 2 months ago, and he asked me, so what are your callers saying? And I said, it troubles me that it's breaking down along political lines. Now, he seemed rather surprised by it, but nothing surprises me about politics. The one perspective I think that has helped me more than any other, and I try not to abuse it, Keith, it is personal. And it's not anything personal with me. It's the fact that I'm married to a physician. And so I hear the scientific side of it. And you know, because of that, I feel like that helps. That doesn't mean I can't watch the news and see the politics. But I try to approach this program with that as a base.
I think that's a great way to do it. My wife is in healthcare as well. Well, not a physician, but she deals with COVID every day, and
sure,
it's kind of given me, you know, a little bit of a baseline to work from when watching anything else, when taking any other content or information in. And I think it's really hard for a lot of people that see it from a distance for it to be real to them, because it's not impacted them personally. And, you know, I think there's a huge difference in those that either have family that have been affected by it or work around it. I think it gives them a completely different perspective. And, you know, it's hard to put that out there verbally, because you never know what people are going to say and how they're going to feel. And sometimes it's just not worth listening. So,
no, I'm really glad you said that, because I think the two of us are in an interesting spot. But the thing that does bother me, and I try to leave it, it's the misinformation game that goes on right now. And
100%.
And I really resent people who have used the misinformation to their own advantage. I mean, to me, I don't subscribe to an ideology other than all I'm trying to do is stay as healthy as I can and respect people that I'm around.
Yep.
But the brazenness of some people out there, and the lies that they are propagating, that bothers me. I'm a talk show host now. I come from a background of journalism, and whatever that means, it means that at one time I understood and was taught and practiced, you know, how to search for the truth. And I do that here every day. It's a little more complicated sometimes in sports than it was on a sports show than it was working for a newspaper, but it's basically the same practices.
I agree with you. There's a level of ethics that's lacking in a lot of places, and it can kind of get really close to towing the line of criminal endangerment as far as the misinfo goes.
It is. And so, you know why it is? Because unfortunately, whether you give me credit or not, some of these people do have a tremendous fan following, and I feel like they're leading people to slaughter
for their own agendas, unfortunately.
Exactly. Thank you so much for your comment.
Thanks. Appreciate it, Paul.
And the best of your wife, because I mean I think that's what it is. And I mean we all look at various groups, you know, servicemen, police, fire. But right now, the medical people who are on that front line, I mean, you're talking about dangerous work. And that includes everyone who's involved from the moment you walk into a hospital to the moment you walk out. We'll be right back.